You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
I'm Tristan Taramino, and this is Sex Out Loud.
That's why I'm literally writing a whole book about my gender.
My mom and I were on BBC together talking about sex work and disability, which is something I never thought I would ever do.
Where do we learn about how to react to bodily fluid?
People have abortions more than we want to admit, and abortion is beyond healthcare. It's really body autonomy.
Someone talks about porn ruining sex. The question for me is, which porn?
I don't want anybody to fetishize my Jewishness who wouldn't stand next to me at a march.
I just wanted to show polyamory in a way that looks like polyamory.
If you're excited by sexual pleasure and sexual politics, you've come to the right place.
I've been this radical queer agnostic theologian for a long time.
They think that Muslims don't have sex.
There is a very specific history of racism and anti-blackness in this country.
I don't know who started this myth that after people are sexually assaulted, they never want to fornicate again.
We really don't think that change happens without knowing what we're for and not just what we're against.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, in just a few days, it'll be the start of Bisexual Awareness Week. First of all, why is there just a week? We can debate that later. But I really wanted to have a guest to celebrate with. Let me tell you who's here. Zachary Zane is a Brooklyn-based columnist, sex expert, and activist whose work focuses on sexuality, lifestyle, culture, and the LGBTQ community. He currently has a sex advice column at Men's Health titled Sexplain It, and a relationship column at Queer Majority titled Zach and the City. His work has been published in Rolling Stone, The Washington Post, GQ, Playboy, Slate, Cosmo, and many others. You can find all of his thirst trap photos on Instagram at ZacharyZane_. Welcome to the show, Zachary.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Tristan.
Do you like Zach better?
Zach is fine, yeah.
Okay, cool. Why is there just 1 week for bisexuals? What the fuck is up with that?
Sorry, well, it's actually, now I think they've expanded it so it's a whole month.
I Googled it right before we got on the air, and they still are saying a week starting September 16th.
So I was looking it up for actually an article I was writing. So it started, I think, 21 years ago. I think it started Bisexual Awareness Day, which is on September 23rd. And then I can't quite find like the time frame for it, but then like whatever it was a few years back, they did like the whole week. And then at least on Twitter, maybe it's unofficial, but we'll do it. They're doing like hashtag bi month and bisexual awareness month. So, you know, hopefully in a few new years from now, it'll just be bisexual year.
Yes, exactly.
Our calendar.
Yeah, and we'll demand that a certain percentage of Congress identifies as bisexual, you know, certain, and like a whole half celebrities will identify as bisexual. Hopefully we will get there.
I think so, eventually.
So we're here to talk about you being bisexual. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure, we can.
Yeah, we can. Can't we?
Whatever you'd like.
No, you've written a lot about this. And first of all, I've said it before, I will fucking say it again. There is still too much invisibility and too much stigma attached to being a bisexual man. It's crazy to say in 2020, but it is still true. And I have seen it enacted in many of the spaces, including very sex positive spaces that I sort of roam in. Do you agree that the stigma is still there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would not have a job if the stigma wasn't there anymore. But I've definitely seen some improvement. I feel like in the past 10 years, we're talking just more about bisexual visibility, bi erasure. We're seeing more celebrities come out as bi. And really, we had for it seemingly for a long period of time. And a lot of that kind of has to do with, I think, Twitter and social media. It's mm-hmm. just a way to have people to connect, bisexual people, pansexual people, and bi-blessed people to connect online. So we're seeing more visibility, and I think that's helping address stigma. But really, I mean, we're not even close to being done with it. It's especially, like, I always forget at this point that I've, like, cultivated I've created my life and kind of cultivated my career around being bisexual because I experienced so much stigma and I was so exhausted by that, that I moved to New York. I started writing for bisexual publications. I started getting involved in like bisexual sex clubs. So really, I so desperately wanted this community. I created a whole life around that. And I could really only do this in the small subset in Brooklyn where I live. But if you live really, I feel like outside of any large city in the middle, you know, the middle of the country, just like people just genuinely don't come out about being bisexual. People still don't think bisexual men exist. Or if they do exist, that they believe so many false and negative stereotypes about bi men. I feel like the main one is that like, oh, they're secretly gay. Mm-hmm. And that they're using it as a stepping stone. And with that, I mean, it's interesting because like that was my knowledge of bisexuality too. That's why I didn't think bisexuality existed. Every guy in college I knew who came out as bi would shortly after come out as gay. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So when I was contemplating my sexuality, I just did not think bisexuality exists because I'd only seen it done in that context. And then I was actually through a therapist that I was seeing when I told him, hey, I'm confused. It was on my second session. I remember being like, I'm confused, and started going on this whole spiel. And he interrupts me and he goes, like, I don't want to be blunt, but I don't know why you keep saying you're confused. It really sounds like you're bisexual. And I replied by saying, does that even exist in men? And he said, Zach, you're too smart to think that. But it just like, I really didn't, I saw no visibility. And what I saw was always that using as a stepping stone. And then it was crazy. Once I came out, it was amazing how many people from college just messaged me on Instagram or messaged me on Facebook. I guess this was a while ago now, when people were just like, like, Zach, I'm actually bisexual too. I didn't come out in college because I didn't know it was a real thing, and reading articles helped so much. But there's just a crazy amount of stigma and just like disbelief around male bisexuality. And honestly, it's exhausting.
Yes, it is. And one of the first pieces you ever published was called I Came Out as Bisexual and Now Can't Date Anyone Gay or Straight.
I wrote that honestly, like on one of those things where I was just like, so frustrated and didn't know what else to write. And I don't necessarily agree with, I think that was a very hyperbolic title, but the whole point of the article, and it was, yeah, the first article I ever wrote in like 2015, but it was about how I had come out as bisexual and I thought the world would be my oyster. I thought like the Woody Allen quote where being bisexual doubles your chances of a date on a Friday night. And then I came out as bi, and then I'd go on these dates with women who then did not feel comfortable with the fact that I was bi, even though I was very clear, I had it in my bio. I wanted to avoid this awkward conversation, but still, either they had all these questions for me or they just ended up just not believing it. And then I would try to date gay men, and gay men were like, oh, I don't really want to date someone who's confused and not like in, has a full grasp of his sexuality. You know, you can date me when you're out and comfortable as gay. I don't want to date someone who's closeted gay is kind of what they saw me being bisexual men. And so I was struggling. I was frustrated. I was really frustrated. I'd struggled with my identity for so many years and it caused so much anxiety and insomnia and unhappiness and depression and feeling so alone and confused. And then I came out and I thought the hard part would be over. And then I'm like, I can't even find someone to date. And then I ended up falling in love with this bi woman. And it was just amazing how much more acceptance and understanding and embrace I had dating. This was my first ever bi person I'd ever dated. It was also the first person I like dated, or I called my girlfriend or called my partner since I'd come out as bisexual. And it was just like, it was a really powerful feeling. I think it was the first time I'd really felt unconditional acceptance and love and embrace from a romantic partner for all of me, since I always felt kind of before I was openly bi, I was hiding a part of me, I was confused, or I was not giving my whole self. And then after I'd come out as bi, no one would love me because I was bi. So I think really that was my headspace when I was writing this piece and why I was so strongly just like, fuck, that like this feels incredible and I really do recommend this. And now, you know, I've dated, obviously, people we dated for like a year, and like I've dated people, I've called people my partners, you know, since her. And it's like pretty much everyone I've dated seriously have been bisexual, or they've been like say gay, but gender non-binary. And in a weird way, I think them being gender non-binary, but then maybe being only attracted to men or whatever, they kind of still accept and embrace me more for my bisexuality. And I think it's honestly so affirming of their gender identity being genderqueer, gender non-conforming. So there's a really strong bond or love with that too. But like, I've not dated really seriously a straight woman or a gay cis man since like coming out as bi. And I think there's a reason for that. Everyone has been bi or genderqueer.
Well, I want to do a public service announcement to all the straight women out there who aren't taking advantage of this identity. I mean, for me, my experience with bi guys, I love bi guys. And if you're like 100% straight, I don't know, that's going to give me pause. I need you to like maybe, I need you to be heteroflexible or bi curious or something. Because to me, bi men, first of all, are often more emotionally intelligent because they've really examined some stuff in their own lives. They've been through some shit. They tend to be a little bit more self-aware. They're sexy as fuck. Any kind of threesome opportunity is available to you when both of you are bisexual. So that is a big bonus. You know, it just really broadens the field. And I think they are more open sexually. I just think that they're less invested in these like heteronormative scripts about what sex is, and they're more adventurous, and they are more likely, I think, also to have similar politics to me, right? To not be, I mean, I guess there could be bisexual fraternity douche bros, but I haven't met them.
It's, you know, there's actually a book. It's like a textbook that came out. It's by, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. It's Dr. Maria Peloria.
Oh, yes. No, I know it. Yeah.
It's called Bi Men, Bi Women. So Bi Men and then Bi Women. And it's talking about, remember, she just interviewed a ton of women who dated bi men. And it really just spoke to everything, exactly what you said. And I think it's because there's so much introspection that goes along with kind of embracing a bi identity. I think there's also a sense of maybe being marginalized and oppressed that maybe, you know, cis straight men don't necessarily have, but it's like bi men were like more selfless lovers and being more egalitarian in housework and less likely to believe in heteronormative scripts just because they, you know, they've done this reflection and they exist kind of outside of that. But like, and I think it really comes down to, there's a difference between also bi men who are out and comfortable with their identity and bi men who are closeted or confused. Mm. And she made that very clear in the book. So, you know, if bi men who are sometimes closeted or confused or feel a lot of shame, they're going to treat women the worst. They're going to treat them very poorly. And there's even, you know, potentially domestic violence and sexual assault and those things. So like, you have to reach a point where you've overcome that shame. You're proud of your identity. You're proud of who you are. And you've done that introspection.
Yeah. Okay. The author who I've met before and who's lovely and who's written other books, I want to say her name. It's Maria Pallotta Chiaroli. And then it could be that those L's are not pronounced. I don't know because I don't know like her background, but I'm just going to phonetically say Maria Pallotta Chiaroli. That's the book, Women in Relationships with Bisexual Men. I just wanted to say that so we get the shout out in there. Yeah. I think we have to take our first commercial break. I don't know how that happened. But let's do that. And when we come back, more with Zach Zane. When you open the Calm app for the very first time, it says, take a deep breath. I know that sounds simple, but it really does make a difference. For me, all it takes is 5 minutes meditating on the Calm app, and I already feel more centered and grounded. Haven't meditated before? No worries. There's a great program on how to meditate. Plus, there's also plenty of music, sleep stories, breathing exercises, even stuff to do for your kids. And they're always adding new content. Recently, they featured 5 tracks from MMXX, the ambient album from Diplo, meant to encourage clarity, calmness, and reflection. I've been really digging The Enchanted Moss Garden, a sleep story by Amiko Susilo. Calm also has a workbook on managing stress that you can download for free. For listeners of this show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Tristan. That's hundreds of hours of programming, Calm's entire library, and all the new content they add. Get started today at calm.com/Tristan for 40% off a premium subscription. That's calm.com/Tristan. Over 85 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds and get better sleep. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Hey, are you bisexual? Are you tired of bisexuals being erased? Are you celebrating Bisexual Awareness Month in any special way? You should call me and tell me about it. 323-SEX-8266. Again, the number is 323-SEX-8266. I'm talking today with columnist, sex expert, and activist Zachary Zane, who said I could call him Zach.
Yes, you can.
So there's consent there if you didn't listen to the last segment. Okay, so I read another one of your articles, which I found fascinating and also weird, about going on dating apps and hookup apps and how, as a bi man, you really have to negotiate differently depending on the gender of the person you're interested in.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to remember which article that was.
Oh, I'm bi and I use Tinder differently with men and women.
Oh, yeah. It was just kind of, I'm trying to remember what I wrote, what I said.
Okay, no, I'll summarize.
No, I think I'm just much more cautious. I think the way you approach kind of dating with men and women as a bisexual man. And I think at this point, it just comes from the place of, at this point, now that I've been out like for a while, gay men are pretty much fine to date me. I'm going to be very hard pressed to find, or more hard pressed in New York to find a gay man who wouldn't want to date me because I'm bi. He might be a little bit awkward about it, and it might lead to some tension or drama that maybe ends up with us breaking up. But I don't think he would immediately write me off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As opposed to with women, especially straight women, it's still, I mean, there's the study that came out a while ago. I think it was in like Glamour, so I don't know if you can call it a study, but like it was like the majority of women would not date bi men. And even there was Amber Rose a while ago, who's bi herself, said she wouldn't feel comfortable dating a bi man. So even bisexual women don't feel comfortable necessarily dating bi men. And so knowing that information and knowing that like I have to navigate this differently, I do approach it differently. I'm very, I'm much more kind of honestly upfront with women. I think from the get-go, I always put I'm bisexual on my profiles, on my bios. So that way, if you're not interested in that, you can swipe left or whatever it is. But I've noticed that, you know, when I put bisexual on my profile, like significantly less women swipe right. But when they do, it's better. There usually is a silver lining. And oftentimes it means they're bi themselves, which is amazing. And maybe they didn't feel comfortable putting it in their profile, but it ended up meeting a lot more bi women that way because I said I was bi. Or women, maybe straight women who are really into bi men or whatever it is. So I definitely kind of approach that. I approach dating women, I think, very differently than I approach dating men. And I do that for Tinder, but also in IRL as well.
And do you think, I mean, my only thing about the article that I wondered is if it was just reinforcing some of these gender binaries, or if in fact we have to accept the reality that men get to sex quicker, men will go from online to offline faster, men will keep chat to a minimum and get in your pants versus women who take longer. They'll text you for longer. They'll get to know you more before meeting you in real life. Why do you think that is?
I think first and foremost, safety issues. It's like, it's, I mean, on Grindr, I mean, before COVID, I've probably fucked, and I'm not joking, 600 men from Grindr, if not more. And it literally is, come into my apartment, it's unlocked, come in, fuck me, leave. Like, and when you're thinking about it, I remember the first few times when you just start doing this and you start having anonymous sex, you're like, this is fucking terrifying. And you're doing literally what your parents always told you not to, like, don't talk to strangers, don't take candy from strangers, and definitely don't go over, invite someone over to your house to have sex with a stranger you do not know.
What about just don't leave your door unlocked in New York City? Okay.
Don't, yeah, anyway. Don't, either. Don't give a stranger the code to your apartment. Literally, it is, I think, some safety issues. And now I'm speaking specifically to gay men versus straight men, but like, or queer men versus straight men. And I think it is definitely just more normalized, especially among the gay community, but also there just isn't that safety issue. That not to say that people don't get hurt, but I think typically you don't have to, like me as a 6'4 guy, I'm really never worried about going into an apartment of a stranger that I don't know. So I think there's definitely the actual like fear of physical violence, fear of sexual assault, but then I think there is some gender norms, absolutely.
I found it interesting that you said that women wait for you to sort of make the move, do the opening line, set the conversation in motion, whereas with men it's like more 50-50.
Oh yeah, sorry, okay, that's kind of slightly different. Is that what you're getting at? But no, yeah, I think still they're the, so, and I kind of hate that, and that's honestly why I sometimes struggle dating women, even bi women, because I still end up finding myself in a traditional gender norm, gender role situation. Even if we're both queer, even if we're both liberal, it's honestly, we're so ingrained to do that. And I'm ingrained to do that when I'm dating a woman versus when I'm dating a man. There is no gender norms. There is no script. There is no what it's supposed to be. But yeah, that was kind of the answer.
What were you going to say before I interrupted you?
No, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, I think there's obviously so much more stigma for women in terms of like having casual sex. I think we're definitely being more sex positive and more empowering. But do you know what's actually interesting? And when you look at the studies and research, it's like lesbians don't have as much casual sex as gay men, not nearly as much. And they do have more similar rates of like the way they have sex and the way they tend to date. Although, you know, there is the stereotype of U-hauling for sure.
Of course.
But like more similarly to straight women, which maybe speaks to, maybe there is something else going on and doesn't have to do as much with gender norms. Because otherwise, if it was an issue with gender norms or heteronormative dating or scripts, then maybe we'd see kind of more casual encounters or more casual sex among lesbians, but we're not necessarily seeing that the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an issue of space. There are like physical limitations about how quick you could fuck someone if you are assigned female at birth and the other person is assigned female at birth, right? There's no like whipping out your dick in a glory hole. That just doesn't really work for vulvas, for example.
Yeah.
And I also think that, you know, an entire culture has been created and sustained for gay men to meet each other in sex clubs, at known cruising areas, in parks, to hook up. And those simply don't exist. I mean, in all my time in the scene, you know, every women's sex party I went to was held in a men's space that, you know, would give it up once a month, maybe, or give us like the worst Tuesday of the month so that we could have our all-girl sex party. So I think there's also just a limit in terms of space. And then there's just, it's not part of the culture. It hasn't been part of our history. And so it's like, I think there are plenty of women who express the desire, like, why can't I just go on an app, leave my door open, a hot lesbian comes by, we fuck, I don't know her name, and we're done. Certainly women say that to me all the time, that that's a fantasy that they would like to make come true, but it's just, it's harder to find that for women.
And I think kind of what you're saying, it makes me think like when you're, I just think of like how much, like almost better a shitty casual encounter is for a man than a shitty casual encounter is for a woman. Because I feel like a lot of these Grindr hookups, it's like, I can go okay, they don't look exactly like the way I thought they will. All right, I can just have sex for 2 minutes and come and leave. And that's kind of that. It was still like, okay, I had sex and it was fine and I orgasmed and I'm leaving. And it wasn't the best sexual experience, but it wasn't the worst. But I feel like it's much more difficult to have a rewarding, like to have that casual encounter in that way could be more difficult for women to be like, oh, this was actually worth it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did this. As opposed to with guys, it's like, well, it took 5 minutes anyway and it came, so I'm done, whatever.
Well, this points to what people call the orgasm gap, which I prefer to think of as the pleasure gap, which is women's satisfaction in sexual encounters, right? We know that the least satisfied people on earth in sex are straight women or women who have sex with men, cis women who have sex with cis men. And so, yeah, there's a big gap there. And it's not a kind of one size fits all, you know, adventure. Like you got to have some skills. You got to have like show up with a toy box. Like you've got to know some things if you're going to have a quickie with someone. So, and that's just true. I think that can be true for men as well, that they're a slow burn or that they want an emotional connection or that it's hard for them to come with a stranger or, you know, all these things are true, but I think it's more true for women.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the recent questions you answered on the Sexplain It column, you said was one of your favorites ever. And the question, the sort of headline is, my partner came out as a trans man. Does that make me gay? So a cis guy is partnered with someone assigned female at birth. That person transitions, identifies as male. And now the cis guy is saying, oh, wait, what about my identity? And also there were some circumstances where people were teasing him and saying like, now you're gay, now you're gay, now you're gay. So why was this one of your favorites to answer?
I think for one, I think I was just so happy that he stayed with him after the transition. I just think of so many shitty straight cis men who this would happen and this would freak kind of like them out or even us. And just like for him, just like it seemed like this normal run of the mill cis straight dude. And he was just like, I love my partner no matter what. I love them regardless of gender. And I just thought there was something beautiful to that. Because mm-hmm. I've heard this story happen in the reverse a couple of times, where initially it'll be two women who identified as lesbians, and then one of the women who is typically the butcher one will come out as a trans man, and then they will stay together, and it's really not a problem. But I think it was different because both of those people were kind of queer before the partner transitioned versus like this man, he is not queer and he's still not queer. But, you know, when I first initially wrote the piece, I honestly was in a weird way too affirming of his partner's gender identity. Where I'm just like I wrote the draft and it really did not take him into consideration at all. I'm like, you need to be careful about how you present. Like, you want to make sure, like, if you label yourself as straight right now, you know, that could really be harmful to your partner as you're trying to affirm their identity. And I really didn't take him much into consideration at all. And then I took a step back. I'm like, no, they're still married. It's still their partners. And I think it was such an interesting question because I think there was clearly no right answer in a way. And I think it spoke to kind of the limitations that labels have. And kind of the advice I ended up giving him, I was like, hey, I think, you know, right now your friends are also teasing you, calling you gay, and you don't feel comfortable with that. You also don't necessarily feel comfortable saying bisexual, and you said that doesn't feel like that necessarily resonates with you because this is the one man you would ever date. And but you're not attracted to other men, you have no desire to be with other men, so being bisexual just doesn't seem right. And he really kind of viewed himself, he's like, I'm an ally to the queer community. I don't even think I'm really a part of it. And that itself also seems kind of wrong in a way for him. And he was confused with that. And kind of the advice I ended up giving him, I was like, hey, I mean, talk to your partner, see what they feel comfortable with you identifying as. But it seems like you've clearly done a good job beforehand. The fact that also your partner, you know, came out and still wanted to be with you, I think speaks to how great you've been treating them, how great you've been treating him. And like the the way you've been clearly affirmative of their gender identity throughout, how much they love you. I think I was also slightly surprised with that. I was surprised that his partner, now identifying as a man, was not like, hey, I need to explore this. I need to be with someone else. I need to be someone who understands me. Like, no, they still wanted to stay together. And I thought that was beautiful. So I wish I could do a column where like I follow up these people 2 years later or a year later and be like, hey, like, so what happened? Like,
yeah.
I send off these people into the world. But kind of the advice I gave was like, talk to your partner, see what they feel comfortable with. But I think if you want to identify as straight, as long as you're not being an asshole about it and kind of reaffirming your straightness when you're, holding hands with your husband now, like, don't be a jackass about it. But I think you're okay to identify as straight as long as your partner doesn't necessarily find it as if you're not affirming their gender by identifying as such.
Right. Yeah. It's this sort of very subtle, nuanced kind of dance, right? In that you're trying to affirm your own sexuality, your own identity, your own gender expression, and your own desires, but you don't want to invalidate then your partner's, right? And that was sort of at the core of your response was, okay, how do we sort of balance this out? Because you do, of course, you want to affirm your partner's gender. And if identifying as straight negates that, I think it's going to be different for everyone, right? It's going to be different depending on the people involved. But I thought it was a really interesting question. And also, like you said, sort of shows the limits of, and I think we're going to see this more and more. I mean, as we know, these Gen Zers and millennials are identifying less and less with labels and categories. Everyone I've met under 30 uses they, them pronouns. Yep, I'm making a generalization, people. Send me your hate mail. So as we see more people come out as non-binary, gender non-conforming, gender queer, sexual orientation is going to be a lot less clearly defined if people's genders are much more expansive.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to see how to navigate that because I think, obviously you can identify however you want, however you choose to, and that needs to be respected. But I think of this like, in terms of like, I'm honestly now like old school and that I identify as bisexual and not pansexual. I'm attracted to all genders. And if someone says, oh, you're pan, I'm like, yeah, I usually say I'm bisexual. I'm attracted to all genders to kind of clarify what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even now, I think about it, it's like we have confusion within the bisexual community of literally what does the word bisexual mean? Like, what does pansexual mean? Does pansexual need to exist if a bisexual identity needs to exist? And sometimes worry, I'm like, well, if we can't figure it out, us, and they're like, well, we expect everyone to respect our identity. And I have some like, some well-meaning uncles who are like, I don't get pansexual versus bisexual. And then I tried to explain it to them and they're like, well, that is even more confusing. And I'm just like, yeah, like, and again, they're not the people who are being assholes about people's labels.
Right.
These are the people who are genuinely trying to understand and like doing their best. But at some point they're just like, I really can't anymore. And a part of me is like, I can't blame them. Like I don't want to like, but so I hope, I'm really in favor of everyone identifying however they so choose and recognizing that they're, our limitations to labels and we need more labels, but hopefully somehow having something that unifies us too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. We're going to take a commercial break actually, but we're going to continue this conversation. So don't go anywhere. I don't know about you, but for the past 6 months, I've felt like my brain is turning to mush. How do you keep your mind sharp? I personally love trivia games. If trivia keeps you on your toes, you need to play Trivia Star. It's the best way to test yourself. Trivia Star is a free mobile quiz app that's entertaining and challenging. Pick your category, choose the correct answer from multiple choices, beat the clock, and you're on to the next one. Right now, Trivia Star is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. You can use these coins and gems if you get stuck to get a hint and beat that level. Just go to the Apple or Google Store and search for Trivia Star. Again, search Trivia Star and enjoy 2,500 coins and 500 gems. Download Trivia Star for free today. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, I am talking to the author of the sex advice column at Men's Health called Sexplain It, Zachary Zane, who is hanging out with us in Brooklyn while I'm in LA as the world burns around me. Okay, Zach, so we were talking about this right before the break. What was the last thing you said before the break?
Well, I was just talking about like how I am supportive. Like, we understand that labels right now and identity labels are limiting, and so we're having more and more and more, but we need to somehow have, in my mind, some form of unification or something, because I feel as if a lot of what we're turning off, a lot of well-intended people who want to understand labels better. And I was speaking specifically with regards to like bisexual versus pansexuality, but I'm trying to explain that to my uncle, who meant really well explaining the differences. And I'm like, well, there's actually some confusion within the bisexual community,
right,
of what bisexuality means. It could be multiple genders, genders that are your own, that aren't your own. Some people don't see it as limiting of people. And he was just like, Zach, I can't. Like I'm trying here, but I can't. So obviously I support everyone identifying however they so choose, and people respecting that. I think we need to somehow, right now we're getting more and more labels, and I wish there was a way we can somehow unify or kind of come back together as a community.
I mean, that's obviously really apparent with dating apps, right? Like, there has to be, you have to check a box or a couple boxes. There has to be an equation. There's math. There's an algorithm in order for people to match up in any way, right? If it was all fill in the blank, like, they wouldn't be able to do the math.
Yeah.
So, and because this is the dominant way that people are meeting people and meeting partners, you know, it's true. We can't just sort of let go of all the labels altogether, because they are meaningful to people. And to me, someone who says, hi, I'm a straight guy, and another person who says, hi, I'm a bi guy, I've got different expectations for those two guys. Now, I could be wrong, right? The straight guy could be evolved and lovely, and the bi guy could be a dick. But it's like, how do we move with it? How do we say, like, I'm fluid? How do we, you know, communicate all that when we've got to check the boxes? And so this leads me to my next question, which is, what recommendations would you give to a guy who's like bi curious? That's not often a thing to check. Should they check straight? Should they check bisexual? How should they approach something when, for example, the desire is there, but maybe the experience isn't?
So you mean in terms of like being on a dating app?
Yeah, or just, like, how do you present yourself on a dating app to say, I'm bi-curious?
Well, if you're a bi-curious guy, you could just go on a gay dating app. I wouldn't even necessarily like sit, like, and you don't have to, I'm not trying to think, if you're just trying to do stuff, I don't think you need to necessarily overthink it. If you're, hey, you talk to a guy, maybe you start dating, and you can say, hey, you know, I'm new to dating men. I'm new to hooking up with men. I just want to let you know, and kind of go from there. I think just being honest and open about kind of your lack of experience, but your interest within trying it. So that way you're not necessarily getting anyone else's hopes up.
And do you think the same for a straight person dominated app?
You can do the same for a straight person dominated app. But I just meant if you're a bi-curious guy, you're specifically looking for men, so you don't necessarily, like, you know, being on Tinder, you're not getting the best out of it if you're trying to search with men. Unless if you're trying to say you're bi-curious to the women that you're dating, just to let them know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, with all this stuff, I think just being honest and forward and upfront about it. And, you know, if you say, especially with bi-curiousness and bisexuality, the one thing I always make sure is, honestly, to kind of say things more confidently, even if you're not. And I say this specifically with bisexuality a lot, where it's just like, because when you don't, if you say something like, oh, I think I'm bisexual, or I might be bisexual, or I'm questioning my sexuality, that opens up so many people to be like, oh, here's why you're not bisexual. oh, you think you're bisexual? Oh, you're not. But when you say, oh, I'm bisexual with confidence, you don't get that same kind of biphobia or people trying to convince you that you're gay or straight. And I think even if you're bicurious, you're not certain of your identity, and that's fine. I'm not saying be more confident in that. But I think, weirdly enough, be confident in your bicuriousness, like in your bicuriosity of just being like, hey, I'm bicurious, and I know this is new and different, but I'm interested in exploring my attractions to the same gender and going from there, if that makes sense.
And how has dating changed for you in the age of COVID? A lot of people now are doing socially distanced dates, or they're doing dates over video chat, whether it's through an app or it's Zoom or Skype or FaceTime. What has it been like for you?
I mean, I really didn't meet too many new people. And, you know, I was fine to be like, hey, there's going to be 4 or 5 months I'm not really dating and I can focus on myself. And I was okay with that. I did have some friends. I was a little bit worried how quickly they freaked out about not being able to date. Where I was like, hey, it's been like 2 weeks. Like, we maybe taking a break from dating is not a bad, it's not a bad idea here. But now that kind of COVID is seemingly not going anywhere, and it's no longer this kind of, in my mind, it's like, well, I have 3 months from taking a break from dating, 6 months from taking a break from dating, and now I could be like, okay, I don't want to take a break take a break from dating for 2 years. Like, I'm not trying to do that. I mean, luckily before COVID, I always kind of have a bunch of hookup buddies and friends with benefits. So I kind of became closer with them, people I trust and communicate with. I did have like a socially distant, like outdoor mask date after we had been messaging online at the park. And that was fine. And I think, honestly, my response is I've kind of just been dating a little less. And I think I'm okay with that and focusing on other things right now. But there was a time I was doing FaceTime dates. But yeah, I know that's not like an exciting, I know a lot of people are like, I've been doing FaceTime dates, socially distant dates, and using like long distance sex toys. I've just been like talking to my friends more and dating a little less.
It's interesting. And it's interesting to sort of see if this stabilizes in some way. I don't know what that looks like. If there's a vaccine, for example, what then the dating scene is going to look like after this period of intense isolation with people?
It's, you know, we'll see. And I wrote this piece about like some people who were kind of not exactly looking forward to COVID ending in terms of dating wise, because they were actually excelling during it. These are people who don't like necessarily one night stands or meeting up immediately. And they got to really get to know some people more in-depthly through phone calls for conversations before the intimate aspect. And they really excelled with that. And I think there was a time where people, I think, were a little bit kinder during COVID with dating. I think it was the first time ever you could call someone and ask them like, hey, how are you doing? And they could just be like, not good. Life is shit. And I mean, and obviously don't unload your baggage on someone else. But I think we all were collectively going through this universal shit. It allowed some for more honesty and transparency and even further intimacy. And hopefully people have been, I really try to be introspective about what I want from a partner moving forward. So I come out of this and when I'm ready, I'm like, okay, I'm dating. I got this down. I know what I can offer. I know what I need. I know what I can look for. But I remember I asked a therapist, like the expert for the piece, being like, hey, do you think this kind of this kindness and not necessarily jumping back into bed with each other and kind of moving a little bit more slowly that we're seeing during COVID will remain once COVID is done? Like, do you think we'll get some of these benefits? And she just point blank was like, no. Like, I was like pretty surprised. She was like, maybe some people, but the vast majority, no. We're going to be back on our bullshit. Like, this is what we do. We're going to be back on our behaviors. And I think this is a weird temporary thing and we'll do our best to learn to it. But I think people will go back to what was, and I thought that was like, I don't know why I wasn't expecting her to say that. Maybe I was just expecting more of like a positive, like, yeah, I think we can learn from this and move forward and hopefully, you know, improve our dating lives. But the fact she didn't say it, I was like, yeah, I actually think you're right. I think people will be back on their bullshit real quickly.
Yeah. Well, and they'll revert, right, to what is familiar. I mean, I think if you've been doing something for 10 years and then you do something different for 6 months, that could become a habit and it could become a new practice, but you have to consciously make that happen. Otherwise, you are going to bop right back to where you are.
Exactly.
It probably surprised you because therapists are not usually that direct. I love a direct therapist. I just love a therapist who's like, no, you really shouldn't do that.
That's one thing I struggle with when getting experts for the sex advice column. I always try to get like a therapist or a researcher or someone. So it's not, you know, it's not just necessarily me. I do want an expert in all the advice. And a lot of therapists always be like, well, it depends. And if you communicate with your partner this way, this, I'm like, this is an advice column. I need to give advice. I can't say it depends. I need to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's always very... One thing I know I struggle with, but at least in terms of trying to get direct advice for a therapist from an expert for the sex columns, because they never will be. I'm like, what is your thought? Yes or no? And they'll always be like, maybe. I'm like, okay, well,
yeah.
See what I can do with this information.
I think that's part of their training.
Right? 100% so, is part of their training.
Yeah. So they're like meant to sort of take the middle road and help guide people. And so it's difficult for them, especially if they don't know all of the circumstances. I think that might also drive them a little bit crazy, which is like, here's the letter. It's four sentences long, and they want to know. They want to know like all this other information that they're just not going to get.
No, and I know when I give the advice column, I'm really hoping that 85% of my advice is right, and I'm very okay with that. You know, I know I'm giving advice based off of the limited information that I have, and I haven't been a therapist with you for 10 years, but I do want to give you actionable advice, assuming the things that I'm going to assume given what you said. But no, I definitely know. I sometimes. But that's kind of what I love about advice columns. You actually get advice.
Yes. Okay, so one last question. With your 600 Grindr hookups and counting, I assume, could you ever see yourself in a monogamous relationship?
Good question. I never say never. It's the moment I always say, no, I'll never be monogamous again, is where I meet someone tomorrow and... I fall in love and they really want to be monogamous and I'm willing to try it for them. I think it's unlikely. You know, when I date someone or have a partner, I'm still not like dating them and just fucking a million other guys on the side. You know, I definitely tone it down and calm it down because I want to make sure I have enough sexual energy for my partner. And if I invest, I feel like too much sex elsewhere or my energy elsewhere, I'm not giving it to my partner. I do want to remain with them. I'm not necessarily opposed to someone just starting out monogamous in order to build a sense of trust and honesty and communication between the partners. And we know we love each other and we have that, we build that foundation. And then with the knowledge that at 6 months, at year, at whatever it is, I would like to open this up in some capacity. So I do know some people need that initial monogamy before they open it up. That said, I just think it's very unlikely that that would happen. Although, again, I'm not opposed to it.
Got it. Well, folks can find out more about you at ZacharyZane.com. On Twitter and Instagram, which I said at the top, you are at ZacharyZane_. Who took regular Zachary Zane?
It's like this kid and he doesn't even use his accounts.
Oh,
and I asked him, I was like, hey, can I use this? And then it's like, no, like you haven't used it in years. Like, I'll give you money.
Oh my God.
And he was like, no, that's what I have. And I'm like, okay. So ZacharyZane_
Okay, ZacharyZane_. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Also, thanks to my engineer and editor, Aaron A-Rod Rodriguez. New episodes of Sex Out Loud go up on podcast platforms on Mondays. You can subscribe and then you don't even have to think about it. It just appears in your feed. You can also catch me on social media. Right now, I'm just on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Tristan Taramino. The show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And until next time, take some time to talk about sex out loud.